Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Welcome to Spin Rate, presented by Topps. Check out Topps Project 70, celebrating 70 years of Topps baseball cards. That's right, this is Spin Rate, the Athletics Blue Jays podcast. My name is Drew Fairservice. We're here talking about your, on a nice little hot streak, Toronto Blue Jays. We were recording this here on Wednesday morning. Blue Jays are now winners of, I believe, 8 of 9 games after a very nice victory over the Seattle Mariners, a plucky bunch of underdogs that they are. Blue Jays made a trade, trading Joe Panik and a reliever whose name is Adam McSomething. I cannot remember or probably even pronounce his last name correctly. On his way to Miami in exchange for Corey Dickerson and Adam Simber. A lot of interesting pieces here. Dickerson is, of course, hurt. Simber is a wonderfully effective-ish reliever, known for his kind of sidearm submarine approach, was a big piece, I believe, Cleveland a few years ago. Anyway, it's something. The Blue Jays are trying to strengthen the bullpen a little bit. You know, obviously, this is the biggest opportunity for growth for the Blue Jays roster, the easiest way to upgrade, the easiest way to get themselves into a better place. Let me tell you, if you want to be in a better place, you want to subscribe to The Athletic. You want to read Caitlin's breakdown of the trade. You want to read what the Ken Rosenthal's of the world have to say. You want to read Keith Law's prospect evaluations. You want to read about the draft that's coming up ahead of the trade deadline. So crazy time for baseball, for transactions, which is what everybody loves. So I need you to go to theathletic.com/spinrate. Sign up. Get you a tidy discount. You'll get to read everything that is available under the sun. Blue Jays baseball, baseball around the league, football, college sports, hockey, basketball, Euro 2020, 2021, however you want to look at it, all right there inside one app with one subscription. If you do subscribe to The Athletic, you can listen to our show, Spin Rate, ad-free. If you aren't a subscriber to The Athletic, obviously I'm telling you to go to that link and hook it up. But if you haven't yet subscribed to The Athletic, you can still subscribe to this show on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Overcast, you know, all the places where you get your podcasts. You can go in, you can subscribe, you can hit us with a rating, you can hit us with a like, all that sort of stuff. It is a great show today. I'm really excited. I had the opportunity to speak with Scott MacArthur, host of The Leadoff on the Fan 590, long time on the Blue Jays beat. Great guy, powerful story. Of course, if you know Scott, you know that after a long time, a life of denial or just inability to live his truth, Scott came out a couple of years ago. We had him on the old show, had a great talk. Here it is. It is the last day, but it is still Pride here in 2021. So it's great to talk about Scott, about all things Blue Jays, as well as LGBT2S plus representation I forgot the cue, representation in baseball, what it means, what it can mean for the future. And just, you know, there's no more empathetic person. There's no person who speaks with more conviction and more, authority and someone who is obviously very passionate about this, about these really important, issues, social issues that do not and are impossible to extricate from baseball. Baseball and sports do not exist in a vacuum. There are politics in all of these things that we love. And there are social issues and there is real life that is a huge part of this and we can't ignore it. So it's no better person to talk to than Scott. So hopefully we can get this to you ASAP before we have a national holiday here in Canada. And also next week in the US, a holiday that's going to take on a very different meaning and a very different significance here in Canada this year, which I think we'll talk about at another time. But for now, really excited to talk to Scott MacArthur on this edition of Spin Rate. Scott, thank you so much for taking the time.
You know, ordinarily I don't do this, Drew, but when the president of the Shohei Ohtani fan club and the assistant to the traveling secretary of the Vladimir Guerrero Jr. fan club invites me on, it's hard to say no.
Listen, you don't have to ask me twice to turn this into the Shohei Ohtani podcast. Like, it's right on the edge here.
I can hear your voice when I read your tweets. Is that enough?
That's good. That's sweet. Okay. I like that. That's good. That means I'm creating good social media content. If you can hear it in my voice. Now, of course you are at the Fan and hosting the morning show. I mentioned, I don't think I'll ever forget. So when you first came to Toronto and first started covering the Blue Jays and you were covering at TSN, you described to me what your like travel was like and how you would count off days slept in your own bed. And it was like one a month or something like that. It was crazy. That would have been 2013, I guess. So it was kind of like a little bit of the bad old days too. Do you miss those days of covering literally every game home and away, plus doing playoff coverage for TSN?
Yeah, it was 13, 14, and 15 where I did the full throttle. So it actually got to the good times.
Yeah, that's
right
true.
Toward the end of that 3-year span. I mean, I think if it would be too black and white to answer that yes or no. Do I miss, when I think about the travel and the airports and the TSA checks and the cab rides into whatever city I happen to be in and the checking in at the hotel and all that, do I miss that? No. Do I miss flying at 6 a.m. after the Jays played a 12-inning game the night before in the city they were leaving to get to the city that I was going to with first pitch still 13 hours away because there's a one-hour time change when I land? No. But do I miss seeing the faces? Be they the manager, John Gibbons, the coaches of the time, and Louis Rivera and Pete Walker are still there. The players with whom the relationships were always interesting, be it R.A. Dickey or Jose Bautista. I do miss all of those unique and interesting interactions. And of course, I don't obviously, and the pandemic contributes to this as well, but I don't get to see a lot of my friends on the beat, the Shai Davides and Hazel Mays and Gregor Chisholms and, you know, Caitlin McGrath's, like all on and on the list could go. So there's a bit of a no to it and a bit of a yes to that answer that question.
It gives you, I think, a different perspective on the team when you're not only watching, but like living there in it. And you see them every day and you are kind of witnessing the players kind of go through it. What do you think your perspective, if you were up close and personal with the 2021 Blue Jays, how do you think that you would feel around the team? I mean, they're in a pretty good spot. They could be better, but they could definitely be a lot worse. I don't know what your sense is of the 2021 Blue Jays from afar.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'll start with the thought of interacting with these players. And I've had some opportunity to do that on a very limited basis, especially in 2019 spring training, when some of these really young players were two plus years younger than they are now, still really young. I think that some of those guys who are just coming into their own would still probably be relatively accessible and willing to chat and et cetera, et cetera. Sometimes guys change as the years go on. And I mean, that's not a judgment statement to the positive or to the negative. It's just a fact, right? The bigger your name becomes, the more demands there are on your time, et cetera, et cetera. And some schlub like me hanging around in the corner waiting to talk to somebody for 10 minutes could be the last thing they want on a particular day. But I think it would be a fun team to cover because of the youth. In terms of observing this team and the way that they play, as I've said often on leadoff, it's like weird and silly that the early scene from the movie Ghost, where she's molding the clay, remember that, doing the pottery thing? This is a piece of clay that is in the process of turning into a really nice whatever it's going to be. But it's still being molded right now. The youth coming into its own. So these players who are very good are not as good as they're going to be. And when you think of that from Vladdy's perspective, that's mind-blowing that this guy might actually get better. So there's that. And then there are the various holes that are quite obvious around the diamond. Be it the challenge of the bullpen, but that's a year in, year out thing that always changes. They've got to figure out exactly who is going to play where on the left side of the infield. And I would say that they have some defensive challenges in the outfield, particularly the two corner outfield spots, although with Springer back and playing center field most of the time, that bumps Grichuk to right, which creates the issue in left field. Teoscar and Lourdes both have hoses, but how many times are you throwing a guy out at the plate, or how many times are you preventing a guy on second base with two outs from trying to score on a base hit to left field, such that it would offset some of the bad routes and the confusion that we so often see? So a lot of the players who are going to be here when it gets really, really good are already here, but some of the players who are going to round this thing out, either from the minor league system or the as yet to be completed deals, either through free agency or just as likely, more likely trade, haven't arrived yet.
It's really interesting. The defense is such a, it shouldn't be as kind of up and down and tenuous. Like, it feels like we're trying to hold, you know, water in our fingers, because in the early parts of the season, the defense was a significant issue. They were kicking it around. You know, Kevin Biggio was really struggling at third base. Bo Bichette had a terrible start to the season at shortstop. And it's, I think with Bo in particular, it's kind of quieted down. Mostly because, you know, defensive opportunities are not spread equally. Sometimes you get a bunch of tough plays in April and you're not able to make them, and then that's what we remember. But then the story sort of shifts as the season goes on. I'm thinking about the outfield defense, and I think that if we could classify the outfield defense as competent, I don't think that's the worst thing in the world. George Springer is nothing if not a competent center fielder. Randall Grichuk is never going to be a spectacular outfielder, but he is certainly competent in right. He is passably competent in center. And then, yeah, left field is a bit of an adventure. Everyone loves, we love to watch Lourdes Gurriel out there, get throwing people out because third base coaches can't believe what he's doing out there. So they're just like, run, just keep going. There's no way he's going to be able to get to that. We'll be right back with more Spin Rate. But first, check this out.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Talking about deals, so the Blue Jays, of course, acquired Corey Dickerson and Adam Simber yesterday from the Marlins. Do you think a guy like Dickerson now has a potential to maybe cut into some of the playing time, either in left field or at DH of a player like Lourdes Gurriel? Like, he's a bit of a wild card, injured as he is, and kind of a competent big league. I'm using that word a lot, competent, but like a guy who offers some things that the Blue Jays need, but isn't obviously the answer to a lot of their questions.
Yeah, and coming up on the end of his contract, so really just as a money thing, the Jays will pay half of his salary or a little more than half for the remainder of the year. And if you've got a guy, who's a left-handed hitter, and they are a predominantly right-handed lineup, especially because Rowdy Tellez hasn't done it this year and is now – I don't know if persona non grata is a little too harsh, but the acquisition of Dickerson for me tells you where they're at with Tellez. Mm-hmm. So they get a left-handed bat who's a career almost 850 OPS against right-handed pitchers. You stick that into the lineup against righties and you can break up your right-handed group. You can hit Dickerson toward the bottom of the so-called murderer's row if you want. You can plug him into the middle if he's going, and that breaks things up a little bit. And then you can pinch hit for him with a Gurriel or whoever has the night off who hits right-handed on the bench if a platoon situation comes up against a left-handed reliever later on in the ballgame. So to me, I don't think we needed to be told this, but that was like a blunt force object to the face yesterday, the acquisition of Dickerson, in terms of here's what we think of Rowdy Tellez at this particular point. And, you know, with due respect to Rowdy, is he traded at some point between now and July 31st for a sack of potatoes? And then that opens up a 40-man roster spot because you know, depending on what's out there, I would imagine they would want to make another addition to the bullpen in support of Jordan Romano. There is always the possibility, I suppose, of trying to address third base in season. Although, Drew, you know, people say Kyle Seager from Seattle. And I think that there's an expensive option that locks in for him if he is traded this year. Like, is that a move that you make? Or, and people always say about Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro, when are they going to get aggressive in the offseason? And it's like, well, Hyunjin Ryu in the winter of 1920 and George Springer in the winter of 2021, like they've had back-to-back off seasons where they've been really aggressive. And Mark Shapiro was on the show last week on Leadoff, and he ended it with a promise, because I made some kind of comment like, man, imagine consequential baseball this September with a bunch of people who've been locked in their homes for 16 months just looking to get out to a stadium. Imagine how crazy it'll be like 2015. And he said, well, we can hold out hope, blah, 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 blah. But he said, I have one promise for Blue Jays fans. There will be consequential baseball in September for years to come. And I wouldn't be surprised, Drew, if this offseason, and I know there's all this labor uncertainty and whatnot, but I wouldn't be surprised if there's a blockbuster trade that is made where some of the young prospects are packaged, because there are only 8 non-pitcher positions on the diamond. And if you've got more than a dozen guys who you really, really love, they can't all play for you. You can try to do the Dodgers thing and explain to 11 or 12 guys how you're going to apportion out the playing time, and that's good. But if you got that plus even more, some of these guys are trade bait. So, I think they're going to get aggressive, but whether it's between now and July 31st really is going to depend on the market and who's truly available. Plus, the Mariners are you know, kind of hanging around the race in the wild card, right? So who knows?
I feel like the Mariners are in the middle of getting a harsh lesson in realities of life outside of the American League West, where
they're not that good.
No, yeah. They're not that good. They've got some really nice players.
A year and a half ago. They tore it all to the extent that what they were doing was tearing it down. They tore it all down a year and a half ago.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're a team that I think is got some bad injuries. I love Kyle Lewis. I love his game. I wish he was out there playing for Seattle, but he's on the shelf. And, you know, Jared Kelenic, had a rough start to his big league career. Doesn't mean that he won't be back, but, you know, a guy like Kyle Seager, I guess that is the question. And this is maybe, you know, I have been very, I don't know, vocal isn't the right word, but like what the Blue Jays have in 2021 is something that they may not have in 2022 in terms of some of the lightning that they've caught in a bottle with Robbie Ray, with Marcus Semien, even, you know, Steven Matz to an extent. I think that now is as good a time as any to make a bold move. Maybe not. You don't want to just throw good money after bad and go bananas just for the sake of doing something. But I think they have a real opportunity here. And I think that the fact that they have, you know, a nice glut of players and something like Rowdy Tellez is a good example that the Blue Jays are kind of getting up to that line in terms of their thinking, because they can't afford to just keep giving playing time to Rowdy Tellez, waiting for him to turn it around, because the games matter now. And they are more comfortable with a player, even an injured guy as he is right now, like Corey Dickerson, knowing he's going to bring a higher floor and a greater ability to contribute now than someone like Rowdy. And if, you know, maybe if you trade Rowdy Tellez and he goes somewhere else and becomes who he can be, that's something that if I'm the Blue Jays, I'm going to live with. You know, you wish Rowdy Tellez well, but it's like we need to win games now, and we need better at bats than the ones that you're giving us. And I think that sort of suggests something that maybe they think that there is really something happening here in 2021.
It's kind of like Kyle Schwarber and the Cubs, right? Like that had run its course in Chicago. And I'm not comparing Schwarber to Les in the sense that Schwarber at least had a more significant track record, but this guy's hitting the crap out of the baseball for the Nationals, and Cubs fans would be looking around going, well, okay, we knew you had power, but like, what's this? You've turned into an elite leadoff hitter. Well, that's life. I mean, sometimes you got to walk away for financial reasons, or it just hasn't worked out. Finances wouldn't come into the Rowdy Tellez scenario, but it's clear that at this point it's probably best for him to move on. You know, the other thing that happened, and it happened probably about, you're better with dates than me, but a week ago, enough that I asked Mark Shapiro about it last Thursday morning, Gabe Moreno playing some third base at AA. And like, so they bring in Springer, who's a veteran. Grichuk's a veteran at this point. Like, Teoscar's on that cusp. He's into his arbitration years now. So I mean, I guess he's a veteran, but not really, right? He's older than Vladdy and Bo, which makes him seem like a veteran, but he's really actually kind of not. So I'm thinking with third base, you're a contending team, or you envision yourself as a legitimately contending team. Semien's another veteran, but is third base next year going to be played by your next big 23, 24 year old kid coming? Like, is a Jordan Groshans going to join Bo Bichette and Vladimir Guerrero Jr., using Groshans as an example, on this infield for a team that says, we want to win the American League East. We want to be legitimate through the playoffs, and we'd love to represent the American League in the World Series and see what happens. I mean, I don't think the answer can be 100% no, but with Moreno playing some third base, and Shapiro's just saying, well, you know, he can't catch every day, but we want his bat in the lineup because he's hitting the crap out of the baseball. Okay, that is a very logical response, but you can't tell me that it doesn't get your flags up a little bit to say, you like Groshans. Kevin Smith is having a pretty good year at AAA. Moreno's now
just moved him to third base as well.
Right. And Moreno's having a bit of a run at third. So, see, to me, it's all, we're showing the rest of baseball that these guys not only can hit, but they can do a little bit of this, shortstop third if you're Smith, catch third if you're Moreno. And I'm not saying they want to trade Moreno, but if they don't want to trade Moreno because they like him a lot, well, what does that mean for Riley Adams? What does that mean for the glut of catchers that they have, both mm-hmm. at the big league level and just about to reach it? So there's so much that they could do here. It's impossible to predict with accuracy what it'll be.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a really fascinating time. I mean, they're a fun team to watch on the field. It's as much fun to try to figure out where their heads are with all of their guys, both at the big league level and just beneath it.
That's a great point. I think, you know, when you're catching depth is something that is about as tenuous as it can be, because it only how much, you know, what the difference in the way maybe as fans we perceive Riley Adam before he has like a, you know, 0-for-20 streak at the big leagues. And Alejandro Kirk is a guy that Caitlin and I talked about on the weekend a lot about. I don't think Alejandro Kirk's trade value will ever be higher than it is right now. He's a guy who's shown he can hit in the big leagues. He's a guy who the Blue Jays have trusted to catch big games, but also like there are those questions about his physical profile. What kind of a career is a player with that kind of profile going to have? Maybe he's more valuable as a trade chip. And then the third base options, you know, we didn't even mention Aston Martin, right? Or Austin Martin, sorry. A guy who's played some third base, played some shortstop, played some center field. And then the other side of that is, so if as Mark Shapiro told you on the air, that they're going to be having consequential baseball in September for years to come. But so say 2021, they make a few more, you know, upgrades in the bullpen. They give it their best shot. They can maybe they're hoping they'll sneak in to one of the wild card spots. God only knows what can happen. But then are you starting 2022 with just going to take three and four different young guys and run them out there at third base? Like, is that a step forward? There's, again, talk about risk. Who knows which of these guys is going to step up? Is anyone going to step up? Cause now you're really into that part of that, of your window, as the term we love to use is like, this is it, right? 2022 is where, if 2021 isn't where it's got to begin, 2022 is like, this is where the rubber hits the road. You know, Hyunjin Ryu is on the back end of his contract. George Springer is another year older. Let's go. Are having some question marks at third base where you want to be. It's, I think you're right about the fascination because, you know, they could go in a lot of different directions. They could make a big splashy move to solidify third base and be like, we're ready to compete. Or they can just really continue to bet on their own player development and drafting and the ability of these guys to step up. And I honestly don't know which way I prefer to see them go.
Well, and I think the other thing, Drew, is that, you know, like Vladdy hits arbitration for the first time this year. And I mean, God only knows what the projections are, but he is a first timer and he's a super two. So it's his first of what'll be four, as opposed to the usual three turns through arbitration. And when I use the term prohibitive, it's just for the point. It's not that I actually believe that this is prohibitive for the ownership for Rogers. But it's still a couple of years before Vladdy becomes, quote, prohibitively expensive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, before he's an eight-figure guy. Like, he could win the American League MVP award this year. He's not getting eight figures in arbitration coming off of his pre-arb first two-plus, almost three full years in the bigs. He's going to make more. Mm-hmm. Because of his year than he would have otherwise, but he's still not going to be crazy. Bo is still a bit of a ways off. Like your youthful core is, you know, and Ryu's contract expires just as Vladdy is and Bo and these guys are into the latter years of their arbitration eligibility. So you've got this window of money to play with as well. And I know people's eyes start to roll into the back of their heads when they think about this. You're Rogers. Why don't you just pay everybody and I'll carry a $300 million payroll? Well, that's not how it works. And whether we like that or not, it's not how it works. So I do think that there's some wiggle room here as well from a budget perspective where they can attack what they identify as their needs. Well, some of their really good young players are not overly expensive yet. And so that's another layer to this whole cake.
It's really an exciting time. And you know, while the future is exciting. I think that we can really talk also about the present. I mean, you know, you have been adamant on Twitter and on the show about the Blue Jays owe it to their core to upgrade the bullpen. So, you know, Simber is a nice start, but do you think that we'll probably see a couple more? You know, what would you like to see maybe the Blue Jays do in the bullpen beyond a guy like Simber, which is a little bit of the Rays model? Let's kind of drop the eye angle, kind of just come at people from a different way. But it's not nothing, that's for sure.
I like Simber a lot. I mean, my only concern for him is that he's not a strikeout guy, which doesn't mean he can't pitch in the big leagues, as his numbers would tell you. But if you're not a strikeout guy, what's happening? If you're not a strikeout guy, you're not a walk guy, and you don't give up home runs, two of those three things are really good. What's happening? The ball's in play.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're facing right-handed hitters, what typically happens, if you're a guy who doesn't give up a lot of fly balls, doesn't strike a lot of guys out, doesn't walk a lot of guys, what's happening to the baseball? It's in play to the left side of the infield, right? Mm-hmm. So pick the ball up, throw the ball across the diamond. That needs to happen for Simber to be truly effective. But it's a good get. And I guess Kimming and the Marlins are just, you know, salary dumping here on the Dickerson front, like get something. I have to be honest. I don't know anything about the AA pitcher the Blue Jays gave up. So that's my bad. And Joe Panik was just a guy at third base who didn't field that position particularly well and put up a 265, 270 on base at the plate. So, I mean, I guess the Marlins are just divesting at this point. It's a good get for the Blue Jays. I mean, there's almost zero risk here.
Mm-hmm.
And I would imagine that they will seek out more arms. You know, they went and got Jacob Barnes. Is a Rodriguez out of Pittsburgh a guy they go get? Well, that's going to cost you more, right? Like that's mm-hmm. So how humped up are they to part with a prospect? Are they too prone to risk aversion to jump in? I think the one thing is that, you know, when we were really being loud about this, they were playing good teams and they were cacking up games late that they could be winning. Now they've played some not so good teams and they've won 8 of their last 9. And as we sit here this morning on June the 30th, Drew, and quite frankly, it should be 9 in a row. I mean, mm-hmm. Let's go back to that Friday night against Baltimore. It should be a 9-game winning streak at this point. Like, I don't know how many more messages this young core has to give to the front office to say, we're good. You know, Mark Shapiro did reference the run differential, you know, and that was not the least of his concerns at that point, but that was one of the motivating factors for Alex Anthopoulos in 2015. I mean, I also think he saw, like, I'm not going to be here, so he's going to throw everything out there. And I'm not saying the Jays are just going to blow up their farm system to save the bullpen for 2021. But I do think if there's a move or two to be had to go and get a consequential arm, then you're looking at Jordan Romano and you're saying, so you're a 9th inning guy, is he our 8th inning guy? Who do we like best against? Like, the one thing I really want to get rid of next, aside from home plate umpires, is the save statistic. And I know relievers and pitchers will tell you routine, like Drew Storen, when he came to Toronto, you remember that name? Almost you don't, but
it was a dark chapter in Blue Jays history.
It was a dark chapter, but like one of the things he said was, you know, as the closer in either Washington or Cincinnati, he said, I had a routine and he wasn't complaining in the way that he was saying it. He said, when I'm an 8th inning guy now behind Roberto Osuna at the time, he's like, by the 6th inning, I'm trying to figure out, is this a game I'm going to get into? Am I not? You know, when should I start loosening and doing the arm exercises and then playing catch and getting on the mound and this and that? And then I get warm and then I cool off and the score of the game changes. Now they don't need me. And he says it happens a lot more as an 8th inning guy than a 9th inning guy, all of these variables. And so I account for that when I say this, but imagine having two or three guys that you'd like that you like in your bullpen to shut down a game. And then you can say Gaye or Jordan Romano. I don't mind him in the eighth when 2-3-4, 3-4-5 comes up. I'd prefer him against those guys, and I'll let the other guy get the save statistic because he's going to have 6-7-8 or 7-8-9 in the ninth inning. And if we can get, and typically it would have to do with changing how arbitration figures are awarded, et cetera. It's always comes down to the finances. But if we can get away from, I got to have the notch under the SV column in my statistical bracket, if we can get away from that and get pitchers just satisfied with, hey, dude, you're doing us a bigger deal in the eighth inning than in the ninth because you went, you got Judge, Stanton, and Voit or whoever, then I think that's part of it. You want to have multiple options late in the game because starters don't pitch into the eighth anymore.
Right.
Unless they're having a low pitch big night and they're, you know, unhittable. So you got to have multiple arms and you got to be able to rack up some saves in the eighth as much as the seventh and eighth as much as the ninth.
There's a guy plays on a team in the National League. I think they've lost five games in a row. I wonder if they would be interested.
Does his name rhyme with Mrag Mrimble?
It might.
Mimbrel? Yeah.
That would be, I think that he's going to, if the Cubs decide, for those who don't know, Scott MacArthur is a notorious Cubs fan, lifelong Cubs fan. So this is, we're having a little bit of fun, but.
They're not that good. And they weren't good last year. Mm-hmm. They would not have made the playoffs in a 162 game season. They're not as good as Bryant's had, I know he struggled a bit lately, but generally had a nice bounce back entering about to enter free agency for the first time, but they're not that good. And as the Darvish trade proved and whatnot, the gazillionaire owner and great financer of the Republican Party in the United States thinks he's broke with regard to his baseball team. And so, you know, if they spit the bit here further, it may compel them to take the teardown another few degrees. And you could get stuff for Craig Kimbrel. Unless you roll over and play dead like they did with the Darvish trade. But, you know, you could get, you should be able to get a prospect of some regard in a Craig Kimbrel trade.
If you're the Cubs. And if you're the Blue Jays, maybe you can get Craig Kimbrel. And then you're just asking Jordan Romano to do different things and maybe pitch in the seventh or the eighth inning.
The domino effect is an amazing thing.
More Spin Rate coming up right after these words from our sponsors.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
I don't want to let you go. I don't want to take too much more of your time, but I do want to talk to you about some of the other stuff that we talked about. We had you on the show, on the old show last year, after you had first come out and announced that you were going to live your truth and be your true self. And I know that here at the last day of Pride, but something we obviously want to talk about. I know Sportsnet did a really great, really beautiful video with you and your family talking about that process and what it was like for you. Where do you see this in baseball? I know the Blue Jays have got some pride themed stuff that you can get, and the Yankees were wearing a pride themed hat, and the Giants. Do you feel like there's actual movement on this issue in baseball, or is this more of like a rainbow washing kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've always, you know, when I think about this, struggled with intent versus result. Like if I see somebody walking down the street with a rainbow Blue Jays logo, my thought is that person is an ally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, that person may also be LGBTQ plus. I don't know this person, but they could also be an ally, and that is wonderful. And then there is also the opportunity for the franchise, the corporation, to sell the merchandise that makes the franchise, the corporation, some money
mm-hmm.
on the backs of LGBTQ plus people who for decades and centuries have been oppressed, persecuted, in some cases murdered for being who they are. So it's always the push and the pull. But, you know, I think in the wake of Carl Nassib, the Las Vegas Raiders defensive lineman who came out, I think that's important. But, you know, I think more, Drew, of the kids and the teenagers today. Like if you know, how old do you have to have memories that actually stay with you? 7 or 8? And that might be a little too young to understand some things, but let's just say 8 years old. Well, equal marriage came into law 16 years ago in this country. So if you add 8 to that, pretty much if you're 24 years old or younger in this country, you have no recollection of a world. You haven't lived in a world where equal marriage hasn't been the law. That's an entire generation of humanity. In the United States, equal marriage became law about 6 years ago. And so there are young teenagers now who don't know a different world. And I think, I mean, it's not exclusive to equal marriage. And there are a lot of pockets, both in our country and the United States, and there are certainly large swaths of the world where it's still not safe to be LGBTQ plus. But I think from a grassroots perspective, using the equal marriage example, we're getting to a point now where the next generation doesn't know any differently. And they're learning about it in schools and in health class. And I hope that doesn't change, despite the efforts of some governments to push us back into a different era on that front. And so it gives young kids who are struggling with their identity, their sexuality, their gender identity, it gives them information. Doesn't change anybody or convert anybody. Most mm-hmm. kids are going to grow up to be straight. They will. They're mm-hmm. not going to go, oh, that sounds interesting. I think I'm that. It gives information to the children who are kind of in an internal crisis. I don't fit here. I don't fit there. Well, I hadn't thought of that. I can identify with that. Maybe this is who I am. So these things are important. And sports is no different. Grassroots. So, you know, when a Carl Nassib comes out and we celebrate him, that's great. When I come out, people say, oh, okay, cool. I mean, there's somebody in the sports media industry who's doing this. Well, Carl Nassib and I have something in common. We are, to use a community term, I mean, we are more mask. We're more masculine gay men. I would love for more effeminate, for lack of a better way to put it, more effeminate gay men, gay boys, at 5, 6, 7 years old, when they're playing t-ball, when they're playing soccer, when they're putting on skates for the first time, I would love it if they could enter a welcoming environment, because then they don't grow up resenting sports and sports culture. And perhaps we don't, as a general fan base, miss out on a Hall of Fame talent who walked away at 8 or 9 or 10 years old because they said, I don't need to put up with this BS. I don't need to put up with this bullying. Mm-hmm. I'm not welcome here. Screw that. You know, I often say about the Toronto Argonauts in our city, nobody cares about the Toronto Argonauts, but they are interested in telling you why they don't care. It's weird. I don't care about the Argonauts, but let me tell you why I don't care. I apply the same philosophy to the gay men I know with regard to the sports and sports culture conversation. They don't care about sports. but they are more than happy to tell you why they don't care about sports. And that's because there is a wound there. There is trauma there. And it goes back to childhood and rejection and bullying and cruelty, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So where we've got to get to, and it ain't happening tomorrow or next week, but where we've got to get to through the years is that these young people can grow up in an accepting environment, be themselves wholly and fully, and enjoy sports if they also, when I say wholly and fully, I don't just mean their sexuality or their gender identity. I mean that they can pursue the things that they enjoy. And if that is sports, they need to be able to have the space to pursue these things in a safe environment in the very same way you would want for your own kids. And so that's where we've got to get to. And it's going to play out over time. But I have to choose to be optimistic rather than my usual cynical self. Because if I'm not optimistic, I'll drive myself nuts.
I think you made a great point. I would love to see the Blue Jays take these things to the next level as well. Allow those moments for, you know, virtue signaling has taken on like a negative connotation. But as you said, if you see someone who's wearing like a rainbow Blue Jays logo, or if they buy a Yankees hat that has the Philadelphia Pride flag as well as the trans flag all integrated into it, like they are signaling virtue, that they are in fact an ally, and that's not a bad thing. But also for organizations like the Blue Jays to be involved in these grassroots communities and contribute and make not they don't have to stick Blue Jay stickers up inside the 519 or some of the places that are just around the corner from the Rogers headquarters or just up the street from the Blue Jays from the stadium. But there's so much opportunity to do advocacy and to spread their wings a little bit and make a positive continue to make a positive contribution like they do with Junior Jays and some of the things where they do ballpark renovations and throughout the city. Include these, I think, in their roster of community outreaches. And there's no downside from my perspective from them get there.
And I think Drew, when you talk about that, I mean, what typically runs in concert with efforts like that? A couple of players show up, mm-hmm. right? And I think that any player who, I keep going back in my mind as you were talking there to Kevin Pillar, you know, who had that incident in Atlanta and then very quietly, although John Lott did a wonderful job a few months later pulling it out of Kevin, but, and then wrote a great piece in The Athletic about it. You know, Kevin went into the community, and I'm not going to speak for Kevin Pillar, but I'm going to assume, and if I'm wrong, I apologize, but I'm going to assume it was his first time in his life talking to young LGBTQ plus people or to members of the community and hearing their stories and going, holy crap, this young man got kicked out of his home. When he came out, you know, he's been living under a bridge and he's been availing himself of these services, you know, just to get a blanket and a bowl of soup and this and that. Like this is real life stuff. And so I think it also it works both ways, and that it creates a more welcoming environment for LGBTQ plus people, but it also can serve as an educational tool for people like players who may very much be an ally if they gave it even half a second of thought, but have never been confronted with it. And then they go into the community, they go, oh my goodness, these stories have moved me. Mm-hmm. So I just think it's an important sort of circle there. It can work both ways. And then if you become more of a sympathetic and empathetic player, you are a safer place for a potential LGBTQ plus teammate. You're a potential safer place to be around, a safer space. You can hold a safer space for people. And so it can work in a variety of different ways. And, you know, there seems to be this brick wall, and I prefer to try to think of it like a game of Jenga. If we keep taking blocks from the bottom closer to the foundation, eventually this thing is going to fall. Mm-hmm. But there seems to be this almost still impenetrable brick wall. And so we, like in Berlin in 1989, when the wall came down, let's just keep taking the mallets and the sledgehammers to it. And if we keep swinging, eventually we're going to make enough dents that we puncture some wounds in it, and it'll never look like it did before.
That's a great note to go out on. And I think about, you know, the circle thing that you mentioned as well, where it's like when we have more representation within the organization, within the, even on the comm side, on the PR side, where there's someone who's going to be able to advocate for these different kinds of experiences. The Blue Jays need to be in these spaces as a brand, as a team, as a part of the community. I would just continue to build that virtuous cycle and to arm more people with those hammers and have more and more people getting their hands in there and taking those bricks out. Scott, I really appreciate you coming on your vacation, on your day off. This is incredible. Where can let the people know where they can hear you and where they can find you on social media, of course. And again, I really appreciate you taking the time to join us.
Yeah. I always enjoy our conversations, Drew. Lead off Sportsnet 590, The Fan, 6 to 9 each and every weekday morning, traditionally 590 on the AM band. You can also get us at sportsnet.ca/590 to listen live. You can follow me on all my social media accounts. I did this more for me because, you know, it's easier to remember. I have the same handle, at Scotty with a Y, at Scotty Mac Thinks, Twitter, Instagram, you name it, that's where I am. So, and the DMs are always open to discuss mental health issues. I do field the odd baseball question, so I'm always happy to engage in that. And not dissimilar to you, my friend, every now and then I get a little overly emotional, and as I'm watching a game, and I'll throw some opinions out there. Actually, you do a much better job of, every now and then I'll find myself in a mood. And then 4 tweets later, I'm like, was that really worth it? You seem to have a much better lid on that than me. But I tend to just drop in the 7th inning of a game where it's all gone wrong. It's like, where's this guy been for 6 innings when they were building a 6-1 lead? Well, now it's 7-6 for the other guys, and he wants to go on about the bullpen. But
it's an emotional time for us all. Watching the Blue Jays, Blue Jays bullpen is like
our feels. Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
It is its own micro version of baseball trauma. Scott MacArthur, always appreciate the chat. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Always fun. Thanks.